Ramchal is continuing now with the various kinds of things that a person may be inadvertently trapped into doing, may not see that they are serious sins. And after giving examples of sins such as theft or lust or forbidden foods, where an individual may have such an overriding temptation that he begins to justify everything for himself, He now turns to another category where it's not so much that there's an inordinate temptation for it, but these are kinds of things that an individual may just belittle, not give consideration to, think that they're trifles, etc. And so he's talking now about verbal abuse. I mean, people who will not eat chazar, be it Chal Shabbos, may not give the same serious consideration to saying something to someone which is an abusive remark. And he says, he goes now to give various examples of abusive remarks, having said that if a person is about tshuva and they get into a dispute, that he may say something like, look who's talking. He gives other examples, and we're continuing now. If donkey drivers were to ask where can they buy feed for their animals, and this would virtually be malicious to tell them, yeah, you can go to so and so, knowing full well your day of knowing that he never sold any grain, any donkeys. You know, that's a malicious misleading. But even things that are not malicious, but arise as a result of an individual's failure to control his temper, failure to control his tongue. Kvar Omer, the Chachamim have said, Godel Oinoas Dvorom Oinoas Momet, that a verbal abuse can even be more serious than theft. From theft you can make restitution. But having said something is extremely difficult. So the other person may forgive you if he wishes, but there's no way of taking back something that you said. The Kolskin, and certainly if this happened publicly, where the Talmud explicitly states, if somebody humiliates someone else publicly, he loses his share in the world to come. And if you look in the Perek says that even more explicitly than that. If you look in Ovis, Perek Gimel, Mishnah, Yud Aleph. Perek Gimel, Mishnah, Yud Aleph. Where it depends on how you divide the Mishnah. In this particular Siddha, it comes out to be section 15. And he talks about several things, including Hamalbim Penechavera Barabim, somebody who humiliates another person publicly. Afal Pisha Yesh Biyodoi Torah Masim Sovim. Masim Sovim, although he may have Torah and good deeds, Ein Lachelik Lera Mabim. Meaning, an individual could have spent his whole life learning Torah and doing all kinds of mitzvahs, right? And then, later in life, maybe he's already 72 years old, he humiliates someone publicly, and everything that he's worked for all of his life goes down the tubes. It's totally worthless. I mean, you can imagine a situation of where you've worked all your life to build up a career, to build up an estate, to build up a reputation, whatever. And then you do something which ruins everything. Ruins your career, ruins your reputation, ruins your relationship, and leaves you totally penniless. I mean, if an individual were at the crossroads of doing an act which would be so horrendously destructive to him that it could take away everything that he has worked for his entire life, how cautious would an individual be not to submit himself to that risk? He says that's what happens by making a thoughtless remark that humiliated someone publicly. Perek says, "Afapishesh b'Torah v'yoda Torah masim Torah." No matter how much Torah you learned over the decades, no matter how many mitzvahs you learned over the decades, that one thoughtless act of humiliating someone publicly takes everything away. He loses his entire chedek l'olam haba. Now that is an extremely severe remark. And this is why he points out, he said, you don't find that by Gzeila. You don't find that if a person stole from someone, that this undoes all the mitzvahs that he's done his entire life. Obviously, he's done a serious avera, serious transgression by stealing something, but he can make restitution. Now, of course, the person who he has humiliated can forgive him and restore his chelik talam haba. But if the person is unaware, is not there to ask his forgiveness, or if he refuses to forgive, then the individual has lost his entire chelik talam haba. That's how serious an offense is. And yet, people who would never think of doing anything else may not think seriously about saying something in public about someone that will cause that individual embarrassment. The Talmud further goes on to say that even if all the gates of prayer were to be closed, the gates for someone who complains about having been verbally abused remain open. That's a complaint that will always be accepted, even if everything else is turned out. V'yomer Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar said further, Hakol HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nivchal L'Idei Shaliach. For all transgressions, if Hashem wishes to punish a person for them, he will do it through a malach, through a messenger, or some sort of intermediary. Chutz me'enoa, but verbal abuse, Hashem will pick up the cudgel himself. He's not even give this over to an intermediary. And again they said, Shalei Sha'en HaPagud Nino B'fneim. There are three sins for which the curtain never blocks out. And one of them is, I know, verbal abuse. Even where it involves a mitzvah, such as, there's a mitzvah to reprimand someone who's doing wrong. And the Talmud says, yes, but, does that mean that you can reprimand him in such a fashion that he may be humiliated publicly? And he may turn pale. Talmud Loimel, Vilasisal of Chet. You should reprimand someone, teach him to do the right thing, but not in a way that you will be sinful. So reprimand has to be done very, very carefully. Mikol Elam Amorim Tira. From all of these things, you can see Atechen Mispashti Manti Azor Azleis V'Kamon Shakash. You can see how far-reaching verbal abuse is and how severe its punishment is. One of the things we may not be aware of is that there's some of these mitzvahs apply in our own household. Between husband, wife, and husband, parents, and children. A person may not think of saying something derogatory to his wife in presence of the children, or wife to the husband in presence of the children. Right? And that's a serious mistake. This applies there as well. A parent certainly should reprimand a child. Right? But if a child is humiliated, that is an improper reprimand. And if you have to tell your child something and the siblings are there, unless it is something that has to be said in such a fashion that it is a teaching for the siblings as well, but and even then you must be cautious, the child should be called aside and reprimanded and disciplined privately, because it may be even worse to humiliate a child, because an adult can forgive and a child cannot. A child does not have the capacity to forgive. So even though we have a mitzvah to reprimand a fellow man, and certainly we have a mitzvah to teach our children and to reprimand them and discipline them when they've done wrong, it should be done in a fashion that does not humiliate. Now, if you listen to people, to adults, who talk about the bitterness and their anger at their parents for having humiliated them when they were children, you see how long-lasting these kinds of things can be. Children understand that their parents had to discipline them. but there was no need for humiliation, and sometimes even in front of siblings. And the unnecessary anger and bitterness that some children have could be totally avoided if we keep this in mind and make the proper efforts. Furthermore, there's other things which people may not think to be serious transgressions, such as giving bad advice. The inyan is sinas ha'etzah. As far as giving advice is concerned, shenina b'teres kanim, we learn in the Talmud, v'lifne iver lo siten mirshom. Do not place a stumbling block before a blind person, meaning lifne suma b'davar. Somebody is in a situation where they cannot see their way clear, meaning they are, quote, blind as it were, and they're looking for help. You are not allowed to give them bad advice. Now, there are people who are constantly fountains of wisdom and fountains of advice to everyone. And they may not even mean badly. But the question is, on what authority do we tell people what to do? A neighbor may ask her, complaining about the child not doing well in school. And she'll give her some, quote, helpful advice. She may follow this, quote, helpful advice, which for her is not good. Now, the intention was good, but we know that where the road of good intentions leads to.
But in that case, you're asking for an opinion. I mean, it's not, what would you do if your child, this is what I would do.
This is what worked for me.
I think you have to qualify it. But there are people who constantly go around giving advice. How many people do you know who've given rotten legal advice?
Not counting lawyers.
Every Jew's a lawyer.
A judgment call is something else. A judgment call where a person has the capacity to... Right? But people give lousy advice in legal matters. People give lousy advice in medicine. Right? And because...
Well, that goes to competency. Not. I mean, I think... Isn't this referring to misleading advice or advice that...
But he says, look, if you put something down on the street without any bad intention... Right? And a person dropped, and the blind person went and fell over it. Right? Your intentions may not have been bad at all. You have no intention of harming a blind person. But you're guilty of having put an obstacle that somebody could trip over. Now, you have to be extremely careful in giving advice, because people will sometimes accept people as authorities. You just have to be careful what you say. If you want to qualify and say, look, I don't know if this is good for everybody. How many people have taken pills that somebody else gave them? Here, take this. My doctor said it's good. Right? And the other person is naive enough to take that medication because it helped the neighbor. Right? And you don't share pills, nor do you share legal advice. You want to say, hey, look, this attorney worked well for me. Why don't you go see him? Fine. But just because this was good advice in my case doesn't mean it's going to work in another case. So here he's not talking about giving necessarily intentionally misleading advice. They said you got to be careful what you're doing. Again, people can be the cause of somebody else's harm without having had any intention to do so. Amalach. Now, furthermore, this can it's obviously so much worse when it comes to giving it knowingly bad advice. Oh, Malach, if somebody says to you, Bas Tonya Ma'olikuno, so-and-so's daughter, would she be permitted to marry a Kohen? Al Taimalik Sheira, do not say it's permissible via in El Pasula when she's disqualified. I have this question, I wrote an article about it, I have this question frequently when people call up about a Shidduch, and they say, a friend of mine, is doing a shidduch, and I happen to know, right, that they're concealing a piece of information, or that they may be concealing a piece of information. Do I have an obligation to tell? I had this incident just several weeks ago, where I got a call from family. They happen to know this young man who is 16 or 17 or whatever. He is in a prominent member of a prominent rabbinic family. And the young boy during the past several years has had some serious emotional problems. He happens to be very friendly with his family that they called me. And they saw some of the problems. They saw some of his erratic behavior. And they talked to the family about getting this kid some help. And the father said, absolutely not. It's going to be a blemish on his record if he goes to see a psychiatrist. It may not only affect his shidduch, but may affect the shidduchim and of the other children, and refused to take him to see a psychiatrist. So the family called up and they said, look, we see that this kid's having problems. What do you suggest we do? I said, well, first of all, it's out of your hands. You're not the parents. But I might suggest this to you, that you call the father and mother and tell them that when this young man comes to do a shidduch, that you will ask a shayla about what your obligation is. And I can virtually guarantee you that if you ask a responsible authority, he will tell you that there is a mitzvah, le'samod al dam re'echa, that you're not allowed to stand idly by while somebody is being harmed, and that if you know some information that could prevent harm, that you are obligated to reveal it. And that if this child is not, this young man is not taken for help, and if somehow, I don't believe he's going to survive to the marriageable age without any further difficulty, because unfortunately these things have a tendency to repeat themselves and can't be concealed. But that you will ask a shayla, because you may have the obligation to call the other partner and the other person involved and tell them, I have some information that you should know. Think of it this way. I told this family, suppose your son or your daughter marries, and after they've been married several years and there's several children, the other spouse has a major emotional upset, a nervous breakdown, a mental illness. And then you find out that somebody knew about this and could have warned you about it and didn't. How fair would that be? Now, I'm not a poisek and I'm not saying what you should do, but simply tell the father that if they do not take the child for help, right, the concealment may not work because you may be obligated to reveal it anyway. But that's the kind of attitude that prevails among people, and it's a question of oinoas devolim, withholding information or giving bad information. I think in a situation like that, if a parent conceals a potential problem in a shidduch, that is a noest devolim. They are saying, at least implicitly, this is a perfectly healthy, capable young man or young woman, but they know it isn't true. And that is a serious offense. If somebody comes to ask your advice, don't give advice which you know is not appropriate for the person. And certainly not where you have a personal bias. Give a person advice, sell this property, buy this, whatever. When your intention is because you want that person to acquire this so you would have a better opportunity to get it from him. He says that's absolutely forbidden. Shema Toima, and if you're going to try and justify and rationalize for yourself, but I'm giving what is for him good advice, he said, remember that these are the kinds of things that are in a person's heart. Shenema v'yareisa melekacha, in the Torah, when it says not to mislead a person, says v'yareisa melekacha, you should have fear of Hashem. You may be able to conceal it from others. You may be even able to dupe yourself into believing that what you're doing is right, but you remember that Hashem will hold you accountable for it, and Hashem knows what you're thinking, and He knows what your intentions are. Nimtzolameiden, we see them. Whether a person does have a personal interest involved or he doesn't, you have an obligation to give a person who seeks your counsel, seeks your advice, the clearest, best, truthful advice possible. The Sira Sha'amda Torah Sof Datim Sha'amam, you can see that the Torah is addressing here the mind of deceptive people. The Lavish of Tony Askin, and we're not talking about people who are so foolish, that they're going to give somebody advice which is clearly inappropriate. Obviously, the other individual is going to be able to detect that if it's obviously inappropriate. Right? But so what then are they doing? They're restricting giving advice that does seem, that may seem to be reasonable, where the person can easily assume that what he's being told is the right thing to do. Right? That is the thing that's being restricted. Obviously, they're not talking about prohibiting giving kinds of advice that everybody will recognize as ridiculous. These are talking about people who are sly, and they can use their cunning for evil purposes. They'll give the kind of advice that superficially, superficially it looks like the individual will gain by it. But they know that the ultimately, that it is not for the other person's benefit, it will actually be to his detriment, but it'll be for his own, one's own personal use. How many times do we see now in the paper that people who are financial advisors were indicted for having given bad advice to people who entrusted them with their money, and they did. Now, it sometimes happens that you tell a person to buy General Motors, and General Motors goes down when you thought it would be, and that's a judgment call. But when some of these people who are less than scrupulous, but what happens is they're not giving absurd advice. What they're giving is
giving advice that's good for themselves.
That giving it, he says, this is what he's cautioning against. He says, don't justify it saying I'm going to make a killing for that person when you're really not interested in making a killing for that person. What you're really interested is making a commission for yourself, right? And clearly, things have not changed in 200 years. And I don't know if they had as many security exchanges in those days as they do now, but the problem was then. Therefore, the Torah says, "Shema Toimereitz Yovani Noisenoy." If you think that you can hide behind the real rationalization that, well, I'm giving him advice that's good for him, he says, "Tells you how I adobe most of the life." Hashem knows what's in your heart. The kama nichsholim b'nei adam be'elach atoyim yom yom. He says how common it is for people to fall into this trap frequently. When they are misled and biased by their desire for personal gain. And the Torah explicitly speaks how says how serious an offense this is, where it says, it curses someone who misleads a blind man and gives them bad advice, meaning a person who is, quote, blind as far as any situation, a particular situation is concerned, and you give him the wrong kind of advice, where the Torah utters a very severe curse on that person. The duty of a just person, if someone comes to seek his advice, you have to give him the kind of advice, if I myself were in a situation, what would I do for myself? Besides, taking nothing else into consideration other than what is the good for that person, not for any other purpose, not for any other goal, whether it is imminent or remote. But what happens if you say, look, if I give this guy the proper advice for him, I'm going to do it myself somehow, because what's good for him is going to be detrimental for me. Now that can occur. Now if that happens, if he sees that there's some harm to himself, if he can point this out, say, look, what I would tell you, right, may be good for yourself, but for me it's going to be to my own harm, right? And tell him the facts as they are. He can make the choice. And if you can't bring yourself to do that, say, look, I'm involved in this, I have a personal interest in this, I'm not the one you should ask. Disqualify yourself. I'll call upon him. But under no circumstances, al yatzeo etzich etachlisetov zulos devos Hashem Mashiach. Under no circumstances should you give him any kind of advice if it's not for his own good. Right? The only exception is if you know that that person is plotting evil and you can divert him from doing evil, then you have a right to mislead him. He's going to tell you, like, I've got a deal and I am going to be able to make a killing. Now, if I do this, that's going to cost the other guy a fortune. Okay? But it's an opportunity that I got to make a killing. And he's telling you about how he's going to cheat someone else. Then you have an obligation to prevent him from deceiving someone else, from cheating someone else, or harming someone else. In that case, you're allowed to say, hey, come on, you're making a good mistake. And divert him from the Karanema. This is when the Dovid HaMelech says, Vim Ikesh Tispato, to be cunning with an evil person. The Chuche Alki Yachiyach, the example that the Talmud says, that the brings down, is when Avshalom had led the rebellion against David, right? And Achitophel gave Avshalom some good military advice, and Hushai, wanting to thwart the success of the rebellion, gave him advice which ultimately led to his defeat. And he says that was justified because Hushai was in a position to thwart the rebellion, the evil rebellion. He says, now that's the exception. Right? But otherwise, he said, giving wrong counsel is a very serious offense. To be continued tomorrow. Continuing now on the necessity of exercising extreme caution on those mitzvahs or averas where an individual can be more easily misled because of temptation and rationalize his way into thinking something is permissible or something is unnecessary. And then those kinds of things which are not so much subject to temptation, but because the individual may think that this is legitimate as infractions of business ethics, that extra caution is needed because there's the justification that, well, this is commercial practice and everybody does it, and he points out that you have to be careful not to be seduced into that rationalization. And then there's kinds of things which people may transgress because they think very lightly and they don't of them, and they don't give them the seriousness which is their due. And now he goes on to talk about slander, tale-bearing, gossip, speaking badly about another person. Harechilus Loshen Hora, carrying tales or speaking badly about another person. Kvachumroi Noida, the extreme severity of this transgression is well known. The Goydel Anof of Kirabo Miyoidin, how widespread these transgressions can be because they are so common and so easily violated. This is so widespread that the Talmud says, Bekulam Ba'avakoshen Hora, virtually everyone falls into the pitfall of violating, not if not direct Lashon Hara, what they refer to as Avak Lashon Hara. It is the dust of Lashon Hara, and it is the appurtenances, as it were, auxiliary of Lashon Hara. He may not frankly slander someone, but may say something which can lead to somebody arriving at a negative opinion of someone else as a result of his words. The Amru, and the Talmud gave an example as to how cautious one must be. Hechidom Lashon Hara, an example of Lashon Hara, kigon da Omer, hechem ishtakech nur ele beplanya, no one else has a constant fire going on all the time, he's the only one that has it. a statement like that can be taken by others to mean he is extremely wealthy, never does anything with his money. In his house, there's always something going on. And it may seem as to be a very innocent remark, and yet can be Lashon Hara. Or he speaks favorably about someone and he praises him in front of people who he knows dislike this person, where it's virtually certain that they are going to say something negative. And so you always hear, when someone is praised, always, virtually always hear someone remark, "Yes, but." And so there's always a "yes, but." And this is not only in front of his frank enemies, but it can even be in front of people who are less than fond of him, and or sometimes people are threatened by hearing someone else's virtues, and they are likely to react by saying, "Yes, but." All kinds of similar remarks. It may seem that, well, what I'm saying is not slander. It has nothing to do with debasing someone. They are considered avak Lashon Hara, as it were, the dust of Lashon Hara. Just as we say, gold is gold, and gold dust is that which falls off of the gold during its processing. Similarly, this is avak Lashon Hara. It may not be actual slander, but is the quote dust of slander. Kvali Shaldova, a summary, a general rule. How bedrochem la yetzer, the yetzer hara, the evil inclination that a person has many cunning ways in which to trap a person. Aval kol dova shiuchu livolid mimenu nezek of izoyen lachaveroi. Anything that a person could conceptualize. If I say this, this could somehow remotely be negative to someone else, whether it would cause him harm or embarrassment. Vein b'fon of the shalai b'fon of, whether the person is present or in his absence. Hareza b'klol Lashon Hara, that belongs to the category of evil talk, gossip, slander. Hasonei u'mesoyav, which is despised before Hashem, l'fnei Hamakom. She'amru olav, So much so that the Talmud says, "Kol hamisaper Lashon Hara, if someone speaks Lashon Hara, ki ilu kofer be'ika, it's as though he denies the existence of Hashem." Ukroksiv, and David HaMelech says, "Until him meloshni vaseisere eyu, one who slanders his another person secretly, carries gossip about him, oisei atzmis Hashem says him I will destroy." Now the severity of Lashon Hara. And he will probably quote this as we go on. The Talmud says it is equivalent to the three cardinal averis, three cardinal sins put together. As we know, for all sins, a person is exempt when there is pikuach nefesh, if there is a threat of life. And a person is not required, in fact not permitted, to jeopardize or sacrifice his life when confronted with Shabbos, so we violate Shabbos in order to save a life. If a type of treatment consists of something which is a non-kosher medication, and the doctor says he must have this in order to live, and the laws of kosher fall aside. If someone is in poor health, and fasting Yom Kippur would be dangerous to his health, then he is not permitted to fast Yom Kippur. All transgressions, no matter how severe they may be, all violations are permissible if one's life is in jeopardy. The three exceptions are idolatry, where a person is required to sacrifice his life rather than to worship a false god. Adultery, where a person is should sacrifice his life rather than commit adultery, and murder. Of course, if a person is told to kill someone else or he himself will be killed, he is to accept martyrdom. Now, those three are the only three exceptions to the rule of Pikuach Nefesh, Deuta is kalate rekula, that a threat to life overrides every transgression. Now, these three cardinal sins put together, the Talmud says, are equivalent to Lashon Hara. So that if someone speaks evilly about someone else, somebody carries slander, tales, he is guilty of a transgression as severe as all of the three cardinal sins put together. Very seldom does the Talmud use a phrase that someone who transgresses even a Torah prohibition is kofer be'ika, denies Hashem. It says it about somebody who frankly and publicly violates Shabbos, is considered denying Hashem. The only other place that I remember it is in Lashon Hara, that if somebody speaks Lashon Hara, it is equivalent to a denial of Hashem. Pardon me? It says kol hakoyes, if someone breaks things in his rage, ki'ilu oved avodah zarah, it is as though he worshipped idols. It's true. Now, it's interesting, the Briskerov had made a statement. It's a very, very interesting. The background of this is that there is a mitzvah in the Torah that says loisaisi, do not add on to the 613 mitzvahs. Now, we know that the Chachamim added on 7 mitzvahs. Sages added on 7 mitzvahs, as, for example, the mitzvah of reading the Megillah, which is a mitzvah d'Rabbanon, the mitzvah of Chanukah lift, which is a rabbinical mitzvah, and many, many prohibitions that the Chachamim added on. And we are absolutely obligated to observe everything that the Chachamim said, everything that the sages ordained, just as though it were a biblical prohibition, because the Torah says we are to follow their dictates. Nevertheless, the Talmud says that the Torah forbids meat cooked with milk, and refers to meat, a meat that has mother's milk. So the Talmud says that fowl, chicken, turkey, duck, even though it is forbidden, it is not a biblical violation, because fowl does not have mother's milk. Birds are not mammary animals. Therefore, the Talmud says, this is not included in the biblical prohibition. However, because of the similarity between fowl and veal, beef, whatever, since they could easily be mistaken, the sages of the Talmud restricted our eating chicken with milk. And that is a serious violation, and no observant person would eat chicken with milk. And yet the Rambam says that anyone who says that chicken with milk is a biblical prohibition is transgressing the Torah commandment not to add on to the mitzvahs. There are 613 and not 614. And if one realizes, I am not permitted to do this by rabbinical ordinance, by Talmud ordinance, it's an Aveira d'Rabbanan, that is the way a person is supposed to observe it. If one says, the Torah prohibits this when it is really a Rabbanan, a rabbinical ordinance, he is transgressing the mitzvah not to add on to the words of the Torah. Now the Torah also has a mitzvah leisigro, you are not permitted to decrease or eliminate any mitzvah of the Torah, which would mean that if someone would say about a biblical ordinance that it is not biblical but that it is a d'rabbanon, right, then he is diminishing the number of biblical ordinances. Then he is saying that there are less than 613. So just as one is not permitted to say that an issa d'rabbanon, that a rabbinic prohibition, is of biblical origin, similarly one is not allowed to say anything about a biblical transgression that it is less than a biblical transgression. So the Bris Kirov said that inasmuch as the Talmud has said that Lashon Hara is as severe as the cardinal sins, that if anyone thinks that by speaking Lashon Hara, even though he admits it's wrong, if he says, yes, it's not a good thing to do, but it is not as severe a sin as murder, it's not as severe a sin as idolatry, it's not as severe a sin as adultery, he is diminishing the severity of the sin, because the Talmud says it is equivalent to those. And, for example, a person who would never eat today, and a person who would never eat chazer, and will allow himself to speak Lashon Hara about someone, and if someone chastises him and said, you realize that what you're doing is equivalent to eating chazer or worse, and he would say, oh, how can you say that? Now, eating chazer, that's something terrible. Yeah, but just because I said something about the other person, you're saying that that's equivalent to eating chazer? He says, that's not only a violation of Lashon Hara, but it's also a violation of diminishing the severity of the Torah prohibition. Because Lashon Hara has, according to the Chofetz Chaim, a number of Torah prohibitions when an individual speaks Lashon Hara, and it is of such severity that it is worse than eating chazer. And furthermore, if a person never speaks Lashon Hara, and this is what the Bris Kirov said, if a person never speaks Lashon Hara, but says, of course I don't speak Lashon Hara, I never would, but it is not as severe an avera as you make it out to be. It is not equivalent to the three cardinal averas. Right? He says, then he too is guilty of an avera. Even though he hasn't spoken Lashon Hara, he is guilty of diminishing the severity of the avera. Which means that we have to go around with our mind focused on the severity of the avera, knowing how severe Lashon Hara is, and that if we minimize it in our minds, even though we never speak Lashon Hara, it is as though we were to say, of course I don't eat chicken with milk, and chicken with milk is a prohibition, is a biblical prohibition. Where we have transgressed the avera of adding on to the Torah. He says similarly, a person who never speaks Lashon Hara, but thinks that it is not as severe as the Talmud has said it is guilty of minimizing these and reducing the prohibitions of the Torah. Fantastic concept that a person who has never spoken a word of Lashon Hara in his life can be guilty of the avera of minimizing the severity of Lashon Hara. We are also told that if an individual speaks Lashon Hara about another, that all the other person's mitzvahs can be transferred to him, and that if someone speaks Lashon Hara, if a person speaks Lashon Hara about another, then his mitzvahs are transferred to the one of whom he has spoken Lashon Hara, and the other person's averus, transgressions, are transferred to him. And he says a person may come before a judgment day, and they will present him with a list of all his mitzvahs and all his averus, and he will look at the averus and say, those are mine, I never did that, never in my life. And they say, well, maybe you didn't do that, but you spoke Lashon Hara about so and so, and therefore you have now assumed his averus. And if he will be shown a mitzvah, and he said, oh, I never did those mitzvahs, he says, well, maybe you didn't, but someone who spoke Lashon Hara about you did those mitzvahs, so therefore you are not the recipient of that. So that when we speak Lashon Hara, we are placing everything that we achieved in jeopardy, and also assuming an untold number of averus that we never did, which were done by the person who is the victim of our speaking Lashon Hara. That is the kind of attitude a person should have before he speaks Lashon Hara. The realization of how severe it is which should really stop any thinking individual from speaking about another. Certainly the life's work of the Chofetz Chaim was in explaining in the severity of Lashon Hara. And he wrote so many volumes on the severity of this transgression. And I may have related this, the incident of the Chofetz Chaim at the inn. So an example where he was very pleased to be in the company of horse dealers on Shabbos, who spoke nothing but horses, and said that this was really a pleasure for him because all they did was talk about horses and they didn't talk about people. So that is the severity of Lashon Hara. Next, another transgression to which people are very vulnerable and may not think of its seriousness. Gam hasina v'hamikima. Hatred and taking revenge. Kosha ma'oid lishi malik mimeno. It is extremely difficult for a person to escape these because lev hutal asher livnei adam. Because of a person's spiteful nature. When our anger is aroused at being hurt, we react. Ki ha'odam magish me'oid ve'al benoisav. A person is extremely sensitive to personal insults. Umitztayel tzal godol. And he suffers a great deal of distress when he is harmed or insulted. Therefore, v'hanekama, taking revenge, v'hanekama lo mesuka midvash, and taking revenge for something done to one, is sweeter than honey, kihi menuchosa levado, because that is the only avenue that one has that will put him at rest. And it says there's almost nothing sweeter to a person than being able to get back at someone who has harmed you. And so the impulse to avenge one's insult is extremely strong. And a person may easily justify it by saying, he deserves it. Look what he did to me. And it is only human nature. And he says, yes, human nature is human nature. But we are not supposed to be creatures of nature. We are supposed to be creatures of intellect and creatures of ethics and creatures of morals. It's nature for an animal to be predatory. And an animal does not have a neshama and does not have an obligation not to be predatory. It is permitted to operate it by its natural instincts. We are not permitted to operate by our natural instincts because that's why we are mentioned, that's why we have a neshama.
I think in that case it's not revenge. I'm only doing it because I want him to know what it feels like, so he should improve himself and not do it to somebody else in the future.
There are such things as genuine teaching experiences, but we should not deceive ourselves. We can easily rationalize something like that. If it were to be truly disciplinary, and it's not beyond the possibility that that could happen, but we have to be extremely cautious with ourselves as to whether we're not deceiving ourselves, right? I came therefore, lichesheyia b'koychei l'azav ma'ashetiva machriach ho'isoi, v'yaver al midoisov. If it is within his power to abandon his natural inclinations and to overlook the offense that was done to him, v'lo yisna mishehir boyasina, and is able to achieve a degree of mastery over himself so that he should not hate someone who has offended him, somebody who has aroused his enmity. And not take advantage of the opportunity to avenge a wrong that was done to him. And will not even bear a grudge or resentment against him. Elos hakol yishkach v'yosem eliboy, but is able to achieve a level of forgiveness where he will forget and do away with the resentments, ki'ilu lahoya, as though it were not. If a person can achieve that, chazak v'amitzu, that is the ultimate of personality strength and personality courage. And he does not take this lightly. It does not say that this is something that is easily achievable. This is something that a person must work on to develop those character traits of ridding oneself of hate and spite and seeking revenge. And he recognizes the enormous personal inclination that one has to this. And he goes on to say, to say that this is easily achieved is not true. The only one who could easily achieve this are angels, heavenly angels, that they don't have a mortal protoplasm and they are not aroused to anger and revenge. This is not a simple thing for a human being, a mere mortal, to achieve. Nevertheless, Omnam Gzeiras Melachi, we are commanded to do so by Hashem. This does not need any kind of interpretation, any kind of elaboration. It is extremely evident and explicit in the words of the Torah. Do not hate your brother in your heart, meaning not only should one not act in hatred, but one should not bear resentments and grudges. Do not take revenge, do not bear a grudge against the children of your people. Pardon me? We still had to build refuge for places who were killed because people have this desire to take revenge and may not be able to control themselves. So we realize the facts of life, as he says, look, so you must try and achieve mastery. I remember an incident one where there was a attorney who was an alcoholic. He had recovered several years from alcoholism, and a group of investors hired him to organize a corporation, and they were to open a set of a string of retail outlets. And they made him president of the corporation. He was very efficient, and he did so. And once he had the first three retail outlets opened and operating, they got together and they dismissed him. They fired him. Now, he was very bitter about this because it was clear that he was taken advantage of, and they never had intended to keep him in the corporation. And I met him one day, and he said, I am full of bitterness and anger and resentment, and I will take my feelings and go to an AA meeting tonight, and I will drop them off there. Because if I don't drop these off, I know I will drink again. If I hang on to these resentments, I know it will cause me to drink. And I thought about how fortunate he was, because he has something that makes him realize how destructive it is to bear grudges and resentments. Because he knows that if he keeps on, if he doesn't dispose of these and discard these, that he will be led back into drinking. What people who do not have that problem may not realize is that maybe they won't cause them to drink, but it will cause them heart disease, it will cause them peptic ulcers, it will cause them migraines, it will cause them high blood pressure, and that there are many other evils that can result from bearing resentments. It's just that the average person may not realize it and hang on to these resentments. So what we are being told is not only something which is a mitzvah, but something which is simply conducive to our own physical and emotional well-being. To be continued.